where recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphones work as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue, and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red, as you will lose your place in the queue. Members are reminded they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Item one, apologies. Chairperson's remarks.
Sorry, Councillors Gibbons and Councillor Enright.
Chairperson's remarks. On behalf of Council, I wish to pass on condolences on the sudden passing on Sunday of Jennifer Fulton from Ulster Wildlife. Council worked closely with Jennifer and Ulster Wildlife as a project partner on a number of funded projects over the years, and she will be sadly missed. I'd also like to send condolences to Councillor Enright on the passing of his mother-in-law. Congratulations to young Ryan Dornan from Lochan Island, who has just become the NI Under-16 snooker champion. And congratulations to Tomás O'Kelly from Mullabon, who is a member of Ring of Gullion Cultus, who won the prestigious Senior Fiddler of Oriel competition at the weekend. Item two, any declarations of interest? Councillor Finn, are you looking in?
It was on Chairperson's remarks, just if you let me. Just to wish New Point players a massive break of leg, who they're going to the All-Ireland finals in Athlone tomorrow night, so just to say a big break a leg to all of them and very best of luck to all the cast, crew and their director.
Thank you, Councillor Finn. Item two, declarations of interest. Item three, the action sheet arising from the council meeting held on the 8th of April 2024. We'll go through it page by page for accuracy. Page one, page two, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7. Could I have a proposer and seconder, please? Chair, propose.
I'm duly seconded, Chair.
Seconded by Councillor Andrews. Any matters arising from the action sheet? Item 4 is the minutes of the council meeting held on the 8th of April 2024. We'll go through it page by page for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, page 11, page 12, page 13, page 14, page 15. Page 16, page 17. Could I have a proposer and seconder, please? Proposed by Councillor Kate Murphy. Seconded by Councillor Brennan. David, are you looking in?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Just a question for Connor. Basically, in relation to the flood relief scheme, has the loss adjusters completed their assessments? and have all applicants been notified of the outcome?
Chair, it's anticipated the law successor will conclude their inspections this week with reports to be written up there. We have engaged with those who were applicants to the hardship fund, and letters of offer were issued last week to all those who were eligible for the $2,500 and the $5,000 payments. We will be issuing letters of offer this week to the first tranche of applicants for the enhanced scheme, and hopefully that the payments will be made then in the next week or so once funding has been secured through DfE. A comms update will be issued to all applicants through the grants system as well this week to advise them of the current position and progress with the scheme.
Thank you.
Item 5 is the minutes of the Economy, Regeneration and Tourist Committee held on the 15th of April 2024. We go through it page by page for accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, 8, but I have a proposer and seconder. Proposed by Councillor Clark. Seconded by Councillor Finnegan. Any modifications? Councillor Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just in relation to page 6, it is with regret that the DUP group cannot support the proposed tourism strategy. From the very start of this process, during the workshop stage, when views were being sought from business owners and elected representatives, it was clear that the view that we were expressing from the people that we represent was not being listened to and wasn't being reflected in the ongoing process. In fact, it was being completely ignored. When I think back of the workshop that myself and my party colleague down for South MLA attended in the Downpatrick Arts Centre, we expressed a case for the need to highlight our biggest tourism attraction in the area, namely the Mourne Mountains. And in fact, surely one of the top three tourist attractions in Northern Ireland, known worldwide. We just highlighted the need to have that in or part of the main title promoting this area, and we felt that was paramount to maximise the tourism potential in our area, and I think it would even be worthwhile to see the figures on what areas tourists are actually searching for online to see where that interest actually is. We also highlighted our rich history of Ulster Scots culture, which makes us a distinctive from other areas, and surely when you're trying to promote a new brand, a key selling point is to make that brand different from other brands and to make it more attractive and interesting, to maximise the appeal to people. You know, obviously to make it stand out and make tourists want to come to the area to sample something different. And unfortunately, we feel that reality is that we have lost that appeal because if a tourist searches for a destination and Ireland's true nature comes up, really it could be anywhere from Cork to Donegal. So it's very disappointing but also unacceptable that the areas and culture that we represent were completely ignored in this process. And at the end of the day, all we asked for was to be included. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Hannah. Johnny.
Just on this, Chair, to be quite honest with you, and Jonathan touched on it here, say that this Ireland's true nature. I actually think, to be quite honest with you, quite a few people have actually said this to me, so they have. Why this council has decided to insult the rest of the people of Ireland, I do not know. And the reason I'm going to explain to you what it is, Ireland's true nature, as Jonathan says there, where is Ireland's true nature? We're claiming it here in South Down, so we are. Gary Morning Down councillor, which I think is totally inappropriate altogether. Ireland's true nature is all Ireland itself, so it is the whole of Ireland. So there's no distinct part that you could call is distinctively Ireland's true nature. So the question I'm asking is, and I'm asking all the councillors in this council chamber at this moment in time, why do you want to insult the rest of the people of Ireland and say you've only got Ireland's true nature in South Down, near your Mourne Down council area? I think it's totally inappropriate. I know the officers, I did ask the officers about it, and what it was said to me was it's the councillors that made the decision. There's quite a bit of money spent on this year coming up with this, and I just think it's a total waste of money. And just to follow on from that there, the unprecise MLA asked questions down about tourism down in the Assembly and the Chambers as she did last week. And her follow-up question she asked Councillor, or not Councillor, Minister Murphy about this. And he said, that her question to him was, did he not agree that whenever you're coming up with a tourism strategy or a catch line for the area, that you should use all your assets in this? And he agreed with her, saying that the Mourne Mountains, Sligoillean, Lochiel, and Strangford and Carlingford Lough should all have been included in that there to try to promote the area. Ireland's true nature does not in any way identify this area any more than anywhere else. Should it be Galway? Should it be Donegal? Should it be Kerry? Should it be Cork? Anywhere. I just think this is totally inappropriate. And that is one of the basic reasons. And when the Minister even agrees with us, I do not know why we're pursuing this any further. I just think it needs changed. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Hanlon.
It's just maybe to kind of quantify or clarify what we're talking about here. Are we talking about the tourism strategy or are we talking about tourism branding? Because I think it's been... Well, I would argue it isn't. You know, well, I would argue that it isn't. And also, just in relation to your comments around... I know Diane asked the question in the Assembly, and Conor Murphy didn't come back and say that. Conor Murphy came back and said that a mix of big branding alongside local tourist strap lines. Yeah, but that's what we're doing here. We're having Ireland's true nature, but then we have Mourne, Gullion and Strangford. So that's what was discussed in the many, many workshops. But yet now we're at full council where we're disagreeing again. Why was it not brought up in the workshops? They didn't listen to you. But was it not put out to market testing as well? It was put out to market testing. It wasn't just a decision for councillors. We were given all that what has been tested. I think we were given, Declan sat on one of the workshops, and we were given like 3 or 4 different ideas as well and different branding. But we've got to this point now, and we're going to try and like completely upend it and have to go back to the start again. If we look at the example of Wild Atlantic Way, it doesn't mention the Cliffs of Moher, it doesn't mention Westport Town, it doesn't mention Donegal, but we all know now, after many, many years...
I'm sorry, Hannah.
But you're no completely confusing it with the Ireland's Ancient East as well. This is the strap line for the council. Whenever you type it in of where to go if you're anywhere worldwide, that's what will come up. And then you drill down in. If you're deciding to go to anywhere in the world, you would be thinking around going to Italy, and then you would look at what part of Italy you're going to and drill down into where the different areas are of significance for tourism. I just think it's being confused. Maybe the officer should be able to clarify that.
Councillor Behan.
Thanks very much, Chair. I was pleased to be able to propose the tourism strategy out of committee at ERT last month. I think there was an awful lot of hard work went into repositioning that strategy, and really, really happy with what the outcome of all of that was. Just linking it into, I appreciate that the motion that I brought before the council this evening is going to be deferred to an ERT committee, but on the back of the minutes of the last ERT committee meeting, I'd like to make a proposal, being mindful of the fact that there is a tourism strategy and development at the Department for the Economy, and the proposal I would make is that the Council write to both the Economy Minister, Conor Murphy, and the Irish Minister for Tourism, Catherine Morton, requesting that they meet with a cross-party delegation of councillors in order to advance the Council's stated objective of securing the inclusion of counties Armagh and Down in Ireland's Ancient East. The reason I'm making that proposal, Chair, is to keep the good work going, as started by Councillor Byrne in November 2022. And I would actually just note the points in the commentary that's been made by DUP councillors here this evening. You'll recall that in bringing that motion forward initially and starting the work on inclusion in Ireland's Ancient East, Councillor Byrne spoke not just to the tourism synchronicity and the economic uplift that would come from that undertaking, but also the important work in the context of reconciliation that could be undertaken. And I think that Councillor Hannah and Councillor Jackson have both touched on it there this evening. There is a diversity in offering in this district. I think inclusion in Ireland's Ancient East would give us the opportunity to platform both well, all four pillars of Ireland's Ancient East, really, heritage that would be traditionally seen as Celtic and Irish, and indeed heritage that would be seen as Anglo-Irish and Orange and British. I do think it would be a really, really good opportunity for us to put all our best foot forward, to put on display what this district has to offer from both sides of the traditional divide. So I'd like to make that proposal on the back of the ERT minutes. Thanks, Chair.
Before I bring in Councillor Bowsey, do you have a seconder, Councillor Feehan, for your proposal? Is everyone in agreement?
Can't hear you.
I'm aware Councillor Bowsey is looking at that. Can I clarify, is the motion being withdrawn? Because it's the same proposal. Sorry,
want to say it again?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, if the spirit of the motion has been acceded to this evening, then, yeah, the motion's made moot. As I mentioned during my commentary there, that the objective of the motion is to make sure that the train doesn't leave the station, and that the work that was started by Councillor Byrne and this council in pushing for Counties Armagh and Down to be included in Ireland's Ancient East isn't lost in the noise. The Department for the Economy is developing a tourism strategy at the minute. It could be reasonably argued that we started the thought process around inclusion in Ireland's Ancient East, and I want to make sure that we have the seat at the table in the formulation of that strategy. So the spirit of the motion was for meetings to be sought with ministers on both sides of the border, and if that's accomplished through a proposal through the minutes tonight, then I'm happy to withdraw the motion.
Is everyone in agreement? Councillor
Bowsey. Just firstly, in terms of the Moore and Strangford and Galgan, that's not the problem. We just think that should be promoted first. And as for Councillor Hanlon's comments about strategy and the branding, they're very much interlinked. The strategy underlines the narrative supporting the branding. We believe this tourism strategy lacks cross-community support, is politically charged, and does not create the best promotion of our district. Right from the start and in every subsequent meeting, the DUP expressed strong opposition to Ireland's true nature and the selective culture and history to be associated with it in the strategy. But the Council has been determined to press ahead with a tourism strategy that fails to get the vast majority of unionist support. The consultant's own report admits that the term Ireland is strongly affiliated with the nationalist community. It's just unfortunate that the same report goes on to conclude that this is only a perception and can therefore be disregarded. Would nationalists be content with our tourism strapline being the UK's true nature, despite being just as logical? For obvious reasons, they wouldn't. So why expect unionists to champion terms that are likewise politically sensitive? Not only is it a divisive tourism strategy, it is a weak one too. Councillor Hannah has said to pick a slogan, Ireland's true nature, that literally any council in the whole of Ireland could use, is not authentic and thus not good marketing. There are countless features within our district that would easily set us apart from the rest of the country and still have global appeal. It's worth noting that out of the 3 million plus tourists to come to Northern Ireland every year, roughly 75% come from within the British Isles. GB 50%, ROI 25%. When our next-door neighbours make up the vast majority of our tourism, it makes no sense to market ourselves in the context of Ireland. So to conclude, for the Council to have spent thousands of pounds on devising a tourism strategy that doesn't even have cross-community support is deeply concerning. This is a tourism strategy. There's no reason why we couldn't have devised something that unites us all and positively promotes the place we all know and love. We therefore propose an amendment for Ireland's true nature to be replaced for branding that can gain cross-community support.
Mr. Bisey, do you have a seconder for your proposal?
Yes. I've indicated to speak. Madam Chair, I would like to second Councillor Bisey's proposal. The thing that is really lacking in this proposal is the lack of a geographical marker. Every expert in tourism tells you that you have to have something in place that stands out and is recognisable. And in using a name like Ireland's true nature, it's just such a generic name that does not identify Newry, Mourne and Down in any shape or form. And the issue about that Councillor Bisey and Councillor Jackson brought up about the Ulster Scots issue and whatever, I raised these issues at the East Border Region Committee whenever we were agreeing on different approaches to develop tourism within the East Border Region. And they accepted that the Ulster Scots element, the Scotch Irish, whatever you want to call it, from Robert de Bruce in Carlingford to King John trying to get across at Narrow Water till the Knights at Greencastle Castle developing civil rights for the people of Ireland. You know, there's such a massive, massive history connected to this area. And the Mountains of Mourne is a geographical marker that's known across the world, but yet it's not included in this marketing. So I definitely support Councillor Bisey. It's just really unfortunate that after going through all this, that we have something that is not only a bad product, but is divisive in terms of community cohesion. So I'm seconding Councillor Bisey's proposal. And I think it's only reasonable that the Council supports it.
Is everyone in agreement? Or to vote then?
If we could just ask the members to turn off their lights until we do the vote, and then we've got your list of the... So well organized.
No, she has a list.
Sorry.
I'll repeat it. It is... There are wider issues with the strategy, but as I say, the strategy talks, 90% of one culture over another. So there are issues there. We don't have time to unpack the strategy, but in terms of the branding, my amendment is specifically for Ireland's true nature to be replaced for branding that can gain cross-community support. It's absolutely mad that we're going to go ahead with branding that doesn't get cross-community support.
Chair, we'll maybe just bring, if you could maybe bring Conor Mallon just in relation to the strategy.
The strategy that's been presented has been presented in a way that it's a neutral strategy. It doesn't, from an officer's perspective, it's been developed in a neutral format that doesn't, in our opinion, either support one side of the community or another. The branding is a separate piece of work that was carried out in consultation with members and members of the tourism industry, the local tourism sector, and was market tested both locally and internationally, and was presented to members with a range of options, as Councillor Hanlon had referred to earlier, and the preferred option selected by members through them workshops and through council discussions are those that were presented at ERT for approval last month.
Thank you, Connor. So we're going for a recorded vote.
Councillor Andrews?
Against.
Councillor Bowsey?
For.
Councillor Brennan? Councillor Byrne? Councillor Campbell?
Against.
Councillor Clark?
Against.
Councillor Devlin? Councillor Enright is absent. Councillor Fagan?
Against.
Councillor Finn? Councillor Finnegan? Councillor Gobray?
Against.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon? Councillor Hannah? Councillor Hart? Councillor Howell? Councillor Howie?
Against.
Councillor Jackson? Councillor Kearns?
Against.
Councillor King?
Against.
Councillor Larkin?
Against.
Councillor Lee Searchman?
Against.
Councillor Lewis?
For.
Councillor McGuinness?
Against.
Councillor Mathers?
Against.
Councillor McAteer? Councillor McAvoy? Councillor O'Hare?
Against.
Councillor Declan Murphy?
Against.
Councillor Kate Murphy?
Against.
Councillor Selena Murphy?
Against.
Councillor Quinn?
Against.
Councillor Riley?
For.
Councillor Rice?
Against.
Councillor Wan?
Against.
Councillor Sharvin?
Against.
Councillor Taylor?
For.
Councillor Tinley is absent. Councillor Treesdale?
Against.
I have 6-4 and 31 against.
The amendment falls. Did Councillor Byrne put on his light and then Councillor Taylor?
Yep.
Councillor Byrne.
Thanks, Chair. One of the points that I want to hone in on, Conor Mallon just made. But listen, we've had multiple workshops, and I want to just state from the outset, this is not, it was a comment that it was politically charged. This has been led from the tourism industry. As far back as a couple of years ago, I sat with all tourism providers in South Armagh, but not all, you can't say all tourism providers, but a lot of the tourism providers. And it was their comments and feedback that had driven this process. If we can remember the old strategy, which was all around Visit Mullen, it left out the people of South Armagh. And they wanted an equal opportunity to showcase our district and showcase it under a heading that we can all fit under. I thought the workshops were very, very difficult at the start. There were a lot of different contributions. Geodescriptors are in there. Mourne's Gunnell and the Kale are geodescriptors that come under the heading or whichever way we want to interchange them. But when the presentation was made by the new branding experts that came in, for the councillors that were there, would probably have got, you know, the understanding of Ireland's Three Nations, where it came from. It was a bloody brilliant presentation. It was really, really on the money. And you're talking about having to hone in on a geodescriptor. Not all tourism brands hone in on a geographic place. This was honing in on the fact that we have 3 AONBs in our district out of the 8 AONBs in the entire north. 3 of them are here. It talks about the nature of the people, the heritage of this coast, and it was talking about linking it closely to the product that is Ireland's Ancient East. But in the future, it is a natural progression of extending Ireland's Ancient East if we have a strategy that leans on the same values as Ireland's Ancient East. So there's nothing in it is politically charged. And I think the tourism businesses across all divides, and I spoke to tourism businesses on both sides, on both communities, would be horrified to think that we're going to turn this into a political football. Everything in this place is turned into a political football, needlessly. You know, if the Irish rugby team, if the Irish Open, don't turn them into political footballs. To hear contributions to say that to have Ireland here and our next door neighbour be put off their tourism strategy because it states Ireland, right, Ireland, whether it's North, South, Northern Ireland, North of Ireland, whatever you want to call it, it's Ireland. We have to stop politicising it. And we have to give support to the tourism businesses that actually waited for a number of years to get an equal strategy so that they can push forward under an equal umbrella. I'm delighted the report's here. There was a lot of hard work from the officers, and there was a lot of consultants along the way. Not going to please absolutely everybody, but it has to be equal for all, and it has to not, you know, put one side above the other. And this truly doesn't. Genuinely, it truly doesn't, in my opinion. So, delighted that it's finally got across the line, and the tourism businesses of South Armagh are certainly delighted that it's finally got across the line.
Councillor Byrne, Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, Chair, thanks very much. Chair, I took part in a number of events you know, to discuss this issue and again with tourism providers and, you know, as the strategy was to develop. And I think the one thing I would say is we all recognise we have a great product here, this district. And ultimately we have to find the best way as to how we nurture that and develop that into the economic driver that we need it to be to see this district prosper. And that's been one of the, you know, was one of our overarching strategies as a council to develop the economic prosperity of this district, and this obviously is one of the key components of that. I do have concerns. I'm not sure that the Ireland's True Nature, you know, generates the excitement and catches the eye in the way that it should, because there is concerns about the fact that whilst they are a geolocator, it's not necessarily the way that the brand could have been sold in the wider European or world markets that we hope to try and attract. And there are genuine concerns about that, and I'm not sure it is going to be of benefit, the benefit that maybe people hope it will be, but time will tell on that, I suppose, and there's been a vote taken here, and that'll be accepted. It was as a democracy that that's where things will probably go. But there are, you know, there are issues with it in terms of even the Ulster Scots, you know, cultural heritage, and it's a rich cultural heritage that we have here. In that regard, I'm a proud member of that. And there's a lot of opportunity. Again, if that's developed right, and at the minute it's really a footnote in this, it's not given the coverage that I feel it deserves. There's a lot more work to do as a council in terms of developing that and bringing it to the fore in the manner that it needs to be, because there's a large Scots, Irish, Ulster Scots, you know, community in America that would, you know, take a great interest in their history and their roots. And we should be obviously exploiting that and trying to encourage people to come here and see what we have to offer in this district. And that's why, whilst the strategy is what it is, there's a lot more work to do on this. You know, I feel to generate what it needs to. But say there's been a debate here on that, and a vote's been taken on it. But I just have my own concerns. Saying it did take part in a number of the events that happened as this strategy was developed. But I don't think Ireland's True Nature really catches the excitement that we needed to for the wider, say, European and world market that we're trying to attract to this part of Northern Ireland.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Devlin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and I will keep it brief because I'm conscious we are being overshot of some older ground here this evening. You know, I do respect that the DUP weren't happy, and they did voice that at the workshops, and I was at the workshops, but I suppose so much work has gone on over the past while to get us to where we are now, and I know from an officer perspective it wasn't easy, so I want to thank our officers for all the work that they've done in that regard, and the key part here is the market testing, and testing with the international market. You know, we want, very basically, we want more international tourists, we want more bed nights, we want more spend, you know, so I suppose what we need to be doing is supporting the industry and moving forward, because I suppose outside this room, for tourism industry and hospitality right across our district and this island, things are really, really difficult. Really, really difficult. So I don't think any of them want us in here, you know, arguing. I think we need to be putting forward a united front in terms of how we move forward and market this district in the best way that we possibly can. That's really it, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Devon. Councillor Hanlon, you're next on the list. Are you looking in quickly?
It was just to welcome Councillor Fahan's proposal. And to note that, you know, there's already moves being made within the Department of Economy with Conor Murphy and his counterpart in the South. So we'd be very supportive of your proposal. I know it got a wee bit mixed up there in terms of the motion. So it's just to make that point there.
Councillor Bowsey, I'm going to let you in again quickly.
It was just a comment on sort of being accused of being our perception once again and the paranoia because we believe it's politically charged. At least Chris Hazard, your most senior nationalist politician in the area, has been honest about this, or he's quoted in the papers last week or so saying that the reason why he supports an All-Ireland tourism branding is because it addresses partition. So there you have the political agenda, and that's fine. He has his beliefs, his narrative has been. I have my political aspirations. The difference is I'm not trying to infuse my political aspirations into this tourism branding. I'm not asking for it to be the UK's True Nature. I'm not asking for the strategy to be, you know, 90% Ulster British tradition infused into it. I'm only asking for consensus that we can come up with something that we all agree to. This is a post-conflict tourist destination, and we're using terminology that's emblematic of that very conflict, where people, fought over these place names. This is tourism. There's sensitivities. It's not just a case of having an issue with the word Ireland, as we accuse, but when it comes to tourism, there's nationalistic characteristics that are sensitive when it comes to tourism. We spend thousands of pounds employing somebody to overcome these sensitivities and these obstacles, and to come up with something that is quite clearly associated, as the ACH accepts, is more affiliated to the nationalist community. And all I'm asking for is that we can have something that has cross-community support, and that it doesn't look bad for us.
What are you talking about?
Councillor Byrne.
Pardon me, please.
Councillor Byrne, please. Councillor Jackson, I'll let you back in again.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just very quickly on Councillor Fain's proposal regarding Ireland's Ancient East. Just want to make a few comments on that. I think it must respect our own distinctive tourism brand again. I think that's essential to ensure Northern Ireland competes effectively for tourism visitors spend both nationally and internationally. And, I think we need a long-term tourism strategy for Northern Ireland as a whole, which equips local communities to develop sustainable tourism, which also enhances and protects the local environment and natural heritage, supports local businesses, and creates jobs and prosperity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Jackson. Moving on. Item 6 is the minutes of the Strategy, Policy and Resources meeting held on the 18th of April 2024. We go through page by page for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9. Could I have a proposer and seconder, please? Followed by Councillor McTeer. Seconded by Councillor Hall. Matters arising. Yes. Councillor Riley.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if you can give me a bit of leeway in this, I couldn't make that meeting. I had another meeting to do with council business, but I was going to ask at the meeting, if I had been there, could the council have done something to mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day? Because Nuria and Mourne played a massive role in it. There was a shipyard in Mourne Point that created landing tanks, ships for landing tanks on the Mulberry Harbours. 1,000 people, plus all the thousands of American troops that were trained here for D-Day. And if there's anything could be done, even at this late stage, it's the 6th of June, maybe we could do a museum talk on it or something, just to mark it, because it was a huge part of this council and the contribution that we made to destroying fascism in Europe.
Sure, that would be a matter for the Good Relations Forum. If you could leave it with me, I'll come back to you on if there's something that we can do in the working with the Good Relations. I'll check that out and come back tomorrow then. Is that okay? I'll check what come out of that and come back. Sure, that's no problem. I'll check that out. Can I just remind councillors when you're talking, because we have the media sitting remote from us, you have to have your microphone on, which is why we keep saying to you, don't talk across the chamber, because people aren't getting, media won't hear you. But certainly I'll pick that up and come back to you. And Councillor Taylor has seconded. Councillor Devlin.
Thank you, Chair. It's a very brief comment. It's page 3 on the SPNR minute. It was to do with the motion regarding the MMR vaccinations. Just a big thanks to Veronica and the comms team. I think some excellent work was done on the back of that motion in terms of raising awareness, which I think is a really important and worthwhile thing. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Devlin. Moving on. Item 7 is the minutes of the Active and Healthy Communities Committee held on the 22nd of April 2024. We go through page by page. For accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. Could I have a proposer and seconder, please? Proposed by Councillor Devlin. Seconded by Councillor Murphy. Yates, Murphy. Any matters arising? Moving on, item 8 is the Minutes of the Sustainability and Environment Committee meeting held on the 23rd of April 2024. We'll go through page by page for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5 and page 6. Could I have a proposer and seconder?
A duly proposed, Chair.
Proposed by...
Second it, Madam Chair.
Any matters arising? Item 9 is the planning section. Item 10 is the correspondence report. Could I have a proposer and seconder, please?
Opposed.
Opposed by Councillor Campbell. Seconded. Councillor Kate Murphy. Any matters arising? Councillor Fahan.
Thanks, Chair. It's just on Appendix 6, the letter from Minister O'Dowd on the Uree Southern Relief Road. I just have to say that I strongly disagree with the decision to proceed with a fixed bridge on the Southern Relief Road. This is an issue that's well documented in media. It's well documented in public discourse for anybody that spends any time in Uree. You know, Uree's maritime past and the history of the canal, it's part of the town's DNA, and pressing ahead with a decision to close off access to the canal for a whole range of ships and vessels will not only be a huge psychological blow for generations of Uree people, but I believe it would also be incredibly short-sighted. It's obviously a short-term cost-saving decision with long-term consequences for the vitality of the canal and our ability to invest in its regeneration in the long term, as has been done with the Ulster Canal. This decision is extremely disappointing, not just for me, but for so many people across Uree. It is going to become a source of regret in the long term, and I would hope that the position of this council, from all parties and no parties at all, would be to reject the recommendation contained within that correspondence from the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Fahan. Councillor Finn.
Thank you, Chair. Just off the back of what Councillor Fahan was mentioning in relation to Appendix 6, I would like to say that I agree wholeheartedly with him. I think this time last year, we knocked doors across Uree, and aside from the cost of living, a no fixed bridge was one of the biggest things that we heard on the doors. It is an incredibly important issue, and I suppose that decision was taken at a time when there wasn't a minister in place, and that's why I would like to make the proposal this evening that will be seconded by Councillor Fahan, that we write to the minister and ask him to come to this council to explain why, because it is a massive decision, and as Councillor Fahan said, it is going to have lasting impacts on the future of that canal, and it's not something that is going to be reversed if it happens. So on that point, I would like to make that proposal. And then in relation to Appendix 3, the letter that we received from the Department of Communities Minister in relation to arts funding, I know that the Minister had mentioned that the budget was yet to be finalised. So we've seen, obviously, that the budget is being looked at. And I would like to ask that we write to the Communities Minister again just to push that within those final budgetary decisions that his department are going to be making, that they don't forget about our arts communities that are so vital. Thank you.
On Appendix 6, is everyone happy with Councillor Finn's proposal? You're not happy, Glenn, we need to put it to a vote. Yeah. So we're going to take a vote on Appendix 6. Just a show of hands.
That's not right. Oh, no, you're right. Isn't it right?
It's right on it. Oh, goodness sake. Yeah.
The standing orders would indicate that when a proposal is on the floor, the motion needs to be standing. deal with this, because what can happen is another proposal.
That's wrong, Madam Chair. If there's a live proposal, anybody in the chamber is allowed to speak on it before it goes to a vote. Now, I've been a councillor for 34 years. I think I should know that much. Oh. What did he say? You know what, Megan? I don't go alone to get along like you boys do. You boys are afraid to make a move. I was never afraid. I did what I felt was right at the time. And now I'm with the DUP and I'm happier than I've ever been. Yeah. Whoa!
So, Chair,
at least I wasn't afraid to move.
Chair, under Standing Order 17, when a motion is under debate at any meeting, the council amendment for further motions should not be received with the exception of the following: to amend the proposal. So if somebody wants to amend what is existing, that the council adjourn, that the debate be adjourned, or the question I be put, or that the council do proceed to the next business. So the motion is in front of you. If anybody wants to make an amendment, then get to make an amendment. But we hear we take a position on this.
No, it's not.
We are being very clear. We're dealing with item number 6, and we'll come back to item number
3. It's not right.
No, we'll do item number 6, and then we'll come back to item number 3.
It's ridiculous, eh? We're on it. Sure.
The chair not to say what with you.
Legal official.
Yeah, I can do that.
You can't even need to read this.
Glenn, do you wish to amend the proposal?
Do you want to clarify it there?
Just to we'll clarify the proposal, and do you wish to amend it then?
Could Councillor Finn just...
Well, if Councillor Finn gives us the proposal again...
Yep.
And then you let us know if you want to amend it.
We'll bring you back.
Is my mic, am I okay to meet? Just that we write and ask that the minister comes to council to discuss the issue. That he comes. As we previously said, that decision was taken by a permanent secretary, and I don't think that it's unreasonable to ask him to come here to chat with councillors. I think it is going to be a massive decision. There's a huge amount of money being spent, and I think it's reasonable that we ask that the minister who's taken that decision is here.
Excuse me. We're going to have a 5-minute adjournment. Proposer and seconder, please. Proposed by Councillor Andrews, seconded by Councillor Burns. Right, I'm going to allow anybody that wishes to speak on Appendix 6 to come in briefly. But if anybody makes an amendment within that scope, I will have to hear it, and then anybody else that's wishing to speak won't be able to speak. So I'm going to take Councillor King in first.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just to create some awareness on this issue, this is a project that has been hovering around for some time, and I think we have to be very conscious that we don't delay the greater transformation to the Newry area. It's disappointing. The crux of it is it's disappointing that this decision was taken at a time when the Assembly was down and no minister was in place. The Sinn Féin team in Newry worked hard lobbying for Lifton Bridge, and we were pleased that the current Infrastructure Minister had carried out a review of the decision in an effort to ensure all options were exhausted for Lifton Bridge. But however, and ultimately, significant financial constraints placed on the executive due to a Tory government underfunding has meant a lifting bridge isn't affordable. You know, a key point for needing a lifting bridge was to ensure that Near East Canal was being utilised to its fullest, and it was therefore looked at as part of the larger regeneration project that is ahead of us, such as the development around Near East City Park and the new Greenway. So I think it's important, and probably just to ask the council for some advice regarding regeneration and the team that help with that, to ensure and to really benefit the people in the area that they are enhancing our waterways from a cultural standpoint. So I think it's necessary for the council to explore alternative strategies such as optimising waterway usage, and I'm keen to hear if there is any long-term strategy in place, and if there is not at the moment, can this be further looked into? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor King. Councillor Finnegan.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was off the list there, I don't know. Chair. I'm just looking to speak on the social housing.
No, ladder, Councillor Finnegan, this is Appendix 6.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry. I'm a little
bit. Councillor Riley.
Oh, it's Councillor Holland for.
No, it's Councillor Riley for.
Oh, yeah, Chairman, I think the Minister has made a very, very difficult decision on this, and he's not my party, and I know nothing about the man personally, but I think he's shown incredible courage, because every haulier in Northern Ireland on the east coast of Ireland want that road in place as quickly as possible. To take all that heavy traffic out of the town centre in Newry, it's a beneficial to the health and well-being of the people of Newry. And Chairman, the biggest thing about that area and the canal is the bridges over the canal that hinder the development of the Ulster Canal right up to Portadown and into Lough Neagh, and then all the opportunities that that gives. And that's what we should be concentrating on, getting those wee low bridges elevated. But on this issue, I think I have to support the Minister's agreement. I'm sure it was not easy, because there is that desire to have that lifting bridge to be able to let, you know what, maybe one every 20 years or something, it would be needed. So I just can't see how it could be justified in this instance, Chairman, given the real demands that affect people's health and the business community. I think we have to accept what has been done in this instance, Chairman, and I propose that we do accept the situation as it is at present and move on.
Chair, that is a direct negative to what has been, or so it would come down to the vote, I'd say, the proposal. Councillor Campbell.
Sorry, Chair, I wasn't in it. I don't know how I had.
Thanks, Chair. Nice to see my name up there. Chair, I would propose we make an amendment to this proposal, and that I believe it's unnecessary. So it is. I'm the Minister here to explain one of the most difficult decisions forward-thinking decisions that has been taken in this area. So I would propose an amendment that we accept what SDLP Councillor has said, but we move on, so we do, and Councillor O'Dowd is not needed to come to speak to us.
Minister.
Or Minister O'Dowd.
Councillor McTeer.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, I mean, we can't forget that this is, that the policy of Lifton Bridge is the policy agreed by this council. So I don't think we should drift away from that position so quickly, so mildly and meekly, by not inviting the Minister down and discussing this. I mean, the Councillor King said that due to British government funding, but I thought that there was an element of European funding coming in this as well, so, somewhere along the line, if I remember correctly. So I'd like to disagree on that one. And also ask Councillor King, seem quite happy that his minister has interrogated this enough, and has given that he's only back into office a short while. And to me, this looks like a decision that was basically rubber stamped, that was already made, and there's been no discussion on it. So I'm quite dubious about much time and effort was put into treating this, with the amount of seriousness that we have treated this over the last 12 months or so. So, thank you, Chair.
Commissioner Hanlon.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point, and I've listened to the members and their comments, and, you know, not to preempt any vote or proposal. We have no issue with any party writing to the minister, but I really do believe that this scrutiny should be coming from MLAs on the floor of the Assembly. You know, but yes, as a council, we can give our opinion and we can make decisions and we can give, you know, basically what we think is best. But, you know, if we're going to start to invite ministers down, you know, are the ministers going to go around every single 11 councils? Where would you stop? You know, so yes, this is an important issue, but it was decided on the back of a review. And as Councillor King has rightly pointed out, there is a serious issue with funding coming from the British government, and that is a problem. You know, so at some point, and as Councillor Riley has pointed out too, the Southern Relief Road will be transformational for that end of the district. So do we want to hamper it further by, you know, basically playing politics and inviting ministers down for us to scrutinise them whenever we don't really have any, you know, jurisdiction over a minister? And that is where our MLA teams need to step up and come into the fore.
Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, Chair, just a brief point, not rehash everything, but we do have jurisdiction over the ministers. It's their project. It's a city deal project, funding what we're drawing down and we're driving as a council. I fully understand that there's big projects in the district that the MLAs speak up for us or speak up for the people at Stormont that they're responsible for, but they're not council projects. So if we are going and shouting about a project that wasn't under the remit of council, I would fully agree with the comments that Councillor Hanlon has stated, but this is a council project. The last infrastructure minister came and met us. Remember, it was June 2020, Nicola Mallon came and met a delegation from the council, presented to the council to hear the views on this project before then to take it forward. So it is imperative that the minister comes and outlines the reasons to keep consistent with the FI previous ministers to the council, who are then going forward to deliver this project on the city deal funding. Stormont aren't delivering it, so it's council delivered project.
As there's non-agreement, we're going to go to the vote.
Chairman, can I formally second Councillor Hannah's proposal?
Chair, standing orders state that you can't have a direct negative to what is on the floor, so the current proposal is to write to the minister, write to him to paraphrasing, right, whereas what Councillor Hannah is proposing is that we don't write to the minister and we that is a direct negative. So the means of agreeing or disagreeing is through. That's just a show of hands. Four, those four. So those four, Derry, Councillor Finn, proposal. Right, this is for writing to the minister. So those against? Five against. And any abstentions? Four and five against. So Councillor Finn's proposal is carried.
Yeah, Councillor Finn, your appendix three.
Yeah, this will be hopefully much briefer. It's just in relation to the response that we got back from the Minister for Communities, just if we could write a letter just to keep the arts funding on the agenda. I think it's been so badly cut over the last 10 years, and I think when we're in the formation of getting a budget sorted, just if we could really press that home to the Communities Minister again. Thank you.
Is there a seconder for Councillor Poon's proposal? Councillor, everybody in agreement? Yeah. Councillor Campbell?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just agree with Councillor Finn's proposal there. For someone who's worked for 17 years within community arts, I know the benefits of the arts across the community, and I see really underfunded they are. It's been that way for the best part of 10 years under Gloria Sturdy, so fully back her proposal.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Councillor Finnegan?
Sorry, August. Chair. Just on Appendix 4, Social Housing. Look, I just want to welcome the correspondence from the Department for Communities and to reiterate the point that social and affordable homes must be prioritised. Building more social and affordable homes is a priority for Sinn Féin. Last month, we met with the Housing Executive and the Housing Associations to discuss housing and the need for more good quality homes across the district and indeed the rest of the six counties. What we need now is to see real action to demonstrate this and ensure that housing really is delivered, especially for rural communities like South Armagh.
Thank you. Councillor Finnegan. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, Chair, it's on Appendix 5. Just for clarity, did we write to the Home Office as well? Because that was the commentary from Councillor Rice's motion. Last, when I came in and talked on it, and if not, can we make sure that we do write to the Home Office? It's all well and good having the Minister writing back to saying that he was speaking to the Home Office and they said it's not good news, sort of corresponds, but we want the letter back from the Home Office, the same as we had with the seasonal workers in the mushroom industry. So if we could get that off as well.
I think we did write to the Home Office. I was just clarifying. We just from the response.
Move on now to item 11, notice of motion on mental health service providers across Newry, Mourne and Down. This will be heard here at full council. Councillor Sharvin, if you would read your motion and let us know who's going to second it, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This council fully recognises and appreciates the work of mental health service providers within Newry, Mourne and Down. It is vitally important that the service providers are supported to sustain and grow for the future demand. This council will write to the Health Minister, Robin Swan, calling for him to commit financial funding to enable new contracts being awarded and procurement exercises to be undertaken by the local trust. And Chair, Councillor Devlin will be seconding that. Our district is extremely fortunate to have the best mental health service providers supporting our residents in the most difficult of circumstances. The outstanding work that the organisations provide is truly a lifesaver for many in our community. We can never take our mental health service providers for granted, and it is vitally important that we support them at all times. Locally, organisations are running year to year, even month to month, as funding cuts and further reduction of opportunity by the Department of Health and local trusts have an impact, and even only 3 weeks ago, a local mental health charity faces an uncertain future as the Mental Health Support Fund launched back in 2021 ends, and no communication or information on what financial support they will be getting going forward. I personally recently spoke with a number of providers and charities who shared an insight into the work that they are doing, and most providing consulting sessions to 300 plus people annually, supported through over 1,000 sessions and a range of online courses and in-person workshops. Mental health has no barrier in age, with some organisations supporting younger than 16 and going as far as the age of 77. One organisation reported it was also one of their busiest years, with 332 adults being referred into their consultant service and received over 1,700 free consultant services, with a further 132 adults signposted to other support services in the statutory or voluntary sector. The majority of the organisations reported that their biggest financial income is fundraising, and in the cost of living crisis, this has been a challenge. I've brought this motion today to call on the Health Minister to provide further financial package that supports mental health services providers in continuing their great work to sustain the service they have today and to support the organisation to grow to meet the demand of the future. With the unknown future of the Mental Health Support Fund, one way that these providers can be financially supported is through a core cost service level agreement with the Associated Health and Social Care Trust. I contacted the South Eastern Health and Social Care Trust Chief Executive only 2 weeks ago, who is fully aware of some of the fantastic work that the organisations across our district provide. But she stated clearly that unfortunately the Trust does not have any current surplus budget to award new contracts and is currently working to sustain existing contracts within the current financial context, which is extremely challenging. It is clear that with such an absence of identified funding, new services and procurement process, no financial support can be possible without the intervention of the Health Minister in providing further funding to the Trust to undertake such an exercise. It is time for us all to stand together and call on the Minister to appropriately fund mental health services providers in Newry, Mourne and Down District Council and get serious about mental health for all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Sharvin. Councillor Devlin.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose in starting out, I want to thank Gareth for tabling this motion this evening. I know over the last 10 years that I've had in council, Gareth has been a tireless advocate in raising awareness of mental health and is always at the forefront of our council in terms of calling for the support in areas of need. I'm not going to name charities nor organisations, as I know of so many district-wide, many of whom I met during my time as council chair. The work they do is often unnoticed and under the radar, unless you're that person getting help or you're a family member of someone being supported. These organisations, as Gareth has said there very clearly, are plugging the hole of our trust in central government, and this hole is only ever deepening. I know from my engagement with so many that the revenue stream, which Gareth has mentioned there as well in terms of funding and fundraising, has dried up due to the pressures and the cost of living that we're all experiencing at present. But if we really are just to focus purely on finance, which I know is often the driver when allocating monies, to not fund and support these organisations, the public purse will be worse off in the future, as these same people will then require further public services at a potential time of crisis, or worse still, lives in our community will be lost, and in turn then the public purse also loses out in terms of that devastation. So I suppose the morally a proper and also financially prudent thing to do is for investment and support for these organisations who day and daily go absolutely beyond what they're supposed to be doing, and a huge number of cases they are saving lives. I'm very happy to support this motion this evening, Chair, and really hope that these charities and organisations across our district can be funded in a way that they both deserve, as well as our society. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Devlin. Councillor Hanlon.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank Councillor Sharvin for bringing the motion and to shine a light on this very important and serious subject. Also to pay tribute, as Laura said, to the many, many mental health charities in Newry, Mourne and Down who support the residents of our district. There are far too many to mention, and that, I suppose, leads into demonstrating not only the need that is there, but also the support that they provide. Downpatrick in particular has always been a centre of excellence, leading the way in mental health services and really being innovative in how they deal with mental health issues as well. But we have to get real. The mental health crisis in the north continues to grow. We're seeing increasing numbers of people waiting on mental health support and also people losing their lives as a result of alcohol and drug issues, for example. Those struggling with mental health and addiction issues on a daily basis can't wait. They're crying out for help now, and we're more than happy to lend our support to this motion. The Minister and his officials need to commit to the funding model as a matter of priority. Thank you.
Councillor Hanlon. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with your remarks, Councillor Galbraith and Councillor Devlin and Councillor Hanlon. And your colleague also made similar. Sharvin, got glasses. your colleague made similar remarks in the Assembly last week as well. regarding service providers, but I feel there's a little more depth to the problem at hand that cannot be solved in council. At the minute, we have statutory mental health services funded by the Trust, and in the voluntary sector, we have charities who apply for PHA contracts, and then we have charities who manage on grants and donations. The problem is many charities will continue providing public services for as long as they can, even if that risks closure. Charities are rarely willing to walk away from the people that they support, but the situation is at crisis point. And without sufficient payment for the services that they deliver, charities will withdraw from the public services market, and the implications for local communities, for communities right across Northern Ireland, are dire. Funding for public services is often not targeted to meet different communities' needs. A report from the Institute of Fiscal Studies found that funding for local public services is very poorly aligned with need in addition. Managing finances can be very difficult in comparison to the private or public sector. But on the other side of that coin, why do charities not apply for PHA contracts? Well, some of the reasons are the accreditation process is incredibly difficult. It's resource heavy, and it's most definitely a case of making champagne from lemonade. Plus, there is a risk of a loss of freedom and control over the charity. So where's the middle ground that allows for scrutiny by Department of Health when they're giving out money on spend, but yet encourages charities to apply for the Department of Health money? I'm only skimming the surface here of a very complicated issue, but I do think a written call for more funding must also have a request for recommendations to begin to establish long-term trust-based relationships with voluntary organisations with the funding to match for the benefit of their communities that they know so well. So I'd like to suggest an amendment which would read from after the word trust, which would say an action plan for engaging the voluntary and social enterprise sectors in its supply chain.
Thank you, Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Sharvin, are you happy to take Councillor Truesdale's amendment?
Yes, Chair. I have no issue.
Thank you. Councillor Jackson.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, no, I just wanted to thank Councillor Sharvin for bringing this motion forward. And yeah, it is a vital service to our community. Just want to say we fully support that service and would like to see any financial fund, whatever is needed, be applied to it. So thank you, Chair.
Councillor Riley.
Yes, Madam Chair, you may know that I'm the veterans champion for this, representing the council, and since I took on that role, it's become clear to me the very difficult mental health situation so a lot of veterans find themselves in. And I would just like to point out that there is actually special routes for those people. You know, people who were in the Falklands or the Gulf Wars or Afghanistan or even our own troubles, a lot of them do suffer terribly. And there is help out there for them, and it's very important that they realise that. But to take them out of the NHS systems and the charitable systems, there are specific pathways for them. And it's just German taking this opportunity to let those people know. And it's people from all sections of the community. It's not just one section. People from all sections of the community that I have worked with. And I'd just like to make that point, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Sharvin, would you like to sum up?
No, there's nothing really further to add, Chair, other than thank you for those that spoke and the support within the chamber on such an important issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sharvin. Item 12 is motion on road maintenance. The notice of motion has received from Councillor Byrne. Councillor Byrne, if you'd like to read your motion, tell us who's going to second and we'll be heard here at full council.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. The motion reads, this council expresses extreme disappointment at the continued deterioration of our rural roads and recognises the impact it has on motorists and the executive budget through subsequent compensation claims. This council supports the recommendations made in 2019 in Jim Barton's independent review into the funding requirements for structural maintenance of Northern Ireland Road Network. Council writes to the Minister for Infrastructure and the Minister for Finance asking both departments to outline the steps taken to implement the Barton recommendations to date and commit to a multi-year budget to properly address the maintenance of our roads. It's the motion that's been seconded by Councillor McIntyre. Right, yeah. Chair, the people we represent across the district are really fed up about the poor state and the constant deterioration of our roads. Year on year, the rural road network gets worse. Rural communities are particularly impacted negatively
because the rural roads make up 77% of our entire road network across the north. That's 20,000 kilometres out of 26,000 kilometres of roads, and nearly 61% of those roads are unclassified. And we can all sit here and give stories of how our B and C roads aren't fit for purpose, but the unclassified roads that make up 61% of the road network across the rural area are really not fit for purpose. They're simply like driving on the moon. Congratulating the Southern Division for patching a pothole here and there is now the norm for elected representatives. We congratulate because there's a pothole patched that is above the unsafe requirements, and the rest of the road is left in disrepair because we know that they're constantly operating on a limited service. Our job must be to call for better. The Northern Ireland Auto Office compiled an office report a few years ago which recommended the gathering and reporting of statistics on our road network, pushing for greater transparency. And I advise everybody to read some of the figures over the last couple of years in those reports because they're truly scary. They paint a really grim picture of our council district. And we've all heard comments of constituents coming up to us and saying, the state of the roads, I'll talk about it from my own area, the state of the roads here in South Armagh, if you went up north, you wouldn't get roads like that in Bangor or Lisburn. I would say, you know, you can't really say that because all areas are really suffering the same equally. It's a lack of budget. But they're wholly and factually correct when you look at these statistics. In 22-23, which is the last reporting period, at the end of last year, 100,487 defects across the whole of the north. Of the 100,000 defects, just over 100,000 defects, across 11 council districts, one in five of the defects are in Newry, Moran Down. 20% of all road defects are in this council area. Now, if we compare that to some of the other council areas, we take it down into the numbers. Over the last 4-year period, up to 2023, 73,000 defects in Newry, Moran Down, compared to Ards and North Down, which had 16,500. 73,000 to 16,500. So that commentary from constituents who say that the roads are in better condition in other divisions is wholly and factually correct. Of those defects that have been repaired, 84,900 have been repaired across the north in that 4-year period, leaving nearly 16% of defects unrepaired. That's a huge number across our district, and that's why our roads are in really, really poor condition. And that's year on year that gets worse. That 15% is cumulative and keeps adding on year on year. 7.7%. Sorry for throwing out these figures, but we need to sort of show how bad the situation is before we get to the Barton Report recommendations. A 7.7% increase in the number of defects across the north in that period was met with a 7.5% reduction in the DFI budget. How does that make sense? So we go out to say to our constituents, we're putting roads forward, we've got a pothole filled here and there, we're trying our best, limited budget, defects increasing 7.7%, we're the highest in the north by a country mile, they're not getting fixed, and then we reduce the budget by 7.5%. This is further comparing what has happened over the last decade, and the reason why the Barton Report was compiled in the first place is the continued deterioration of our road network. I think by 2016 or 2017, there was an underspend of 311 million. We're now sitting at an underspend of 1 billion, underinvestment of 1 billion. And that's just to maintain the roads that we have in our current state as being safe. I understand there's difficult decisions. I'm not here to make a political point on this. I'm just here to try and use the strength of the council to urge DFI to implement the Barton recommendations. The budget is difficult. We can talk about some difficult decisions for ministers. We can talk about the Black Grant. We always hear commentary around Tory austerity and there isn't enough money. That is all true. We understand the level of funding that we do need to address this issue fully. But the decision making from our executive, year in, year out, when the executive is sitting, has to be challenged. Our recent budget has an allocation of 559.5 million in the resource budget, even though there's a standard service need for $691 million. That's a huge shortfall, and again, is going to make the situation even worse. Just to touch on Jim Barton's report, he put forward a number of recommendations. I think Chris Hazard was the DFI Minister at the time, and obviously the current state of the roads, he commissioned an independent report from an expert from England who worked on highways all his life to look at the structural maintenance funding and what we need for the roads. Now, he stated that in his opening remarks on the report that the budget allocations are nowhere near the requirement that we need to keep the roads safe. Keep the roads safe. We are, DFI, again, are the lowest in this budget, bar the Department of Finance, which we always put to one side, we're talking about services here, the lowest in the budget in terms of finances that they got. At the time of the Barton report, the Northern Ireland spend per capita was half. The Barton report, remember now, is 2018-2019. At that time, the spend per capita in Northern Ireland was half the level that we were spending in 2010-2011. How did we get from spending the money and the resources on our roads in 2010 and 2011 to 5-6 years later spending half that amount and further cutting it year on year? And then we question why the roads are in bad shape. DFI has a statutory duty to maintain the roads in a safe and serviceable condition. We hear that every time they come to the council. But to comply with this duty, they develop guidance and standards related to inspections and defects to help them stay in line with that statutory duty. They've changed those standards 12 times in a 3-year period. How can you get any consistency in inspections or fixing defects when you constantly change the standards and the guidance? 12 times in 36 months. That's changing every couple of months. And it's changing because they're changing the levels of what they deem to be unsafe so that they can allocate their budget to the worst parts of the road. Again, affecting rural communities a lot more than urban communities. Barton concludes, and the audit office, when they done the report to put the statistical report out in 2017, they concluded that we needed $143 million to keep our network safe, year on year. They talk in the Northern Ireland report about being $192 million in today's prices. The budget allocation is sitting at $85 million. $143 needed to maintain the current roads, not any additional capital, but to maintain the current roads in safe and serviceable condition, and we're sitting at $85 million. $80 million the last budget, $75 the last budget. Nowhere near enough, and that's why we get up to over $1 billion of underinvestment. To quote Jim Barton, and this is a strong quote in his report, the way in which maintenance funds have been allocated by the executive demonstrates a volatile and even bizarre approach. Insufficient budgets that DFI have to come and plead for money in monitoring rounds, most often rejected. We've seen it in our former minister, where had a very reduced budget, went in the winter monitoring round for more funds for the roads, and the 3 bids were rejected. Certainty is absolutely key. These department needs to know what its budget is and what bids that they're going to get in the monitoring rounds. But we have a culture. We have a culture now in the Department of Infrastructure of taking from one line and adding to the other line to balance the budget in year as pressures arise. And the reason why this is allowed to stand is because we've got single-year budgets. So we're working in a 12-month period. Barton talks in his report about how doing work in the winter months is like urinating in the wind. It's pointless because you're filling a pothole in the winter months and it'll be out of it in a matter of weeks. So one of the conclusions, and this is why it's key to write to the Finance Minister and the Infrastructure Minister, is that we move and make a commitment. I understand the legalities around not being able to do it this year. I fully understand that. But there's been commitments in the past of moving the multi-year budgets, which would alleviate some of the pressures and move us from that $85 million closer to the $145 million and allow DFI to actually properly plan maintenance on the roads. Moving to a 5-year budget makes a 20% saving on DFI's budget. That's 20% saving more money to fix the rural network. Barton also outlines the pothole filling, spraying of potholes that we see all the time now. Obviously, we'd like to move to more surface dressing. But in the report, as back as 2018, states that that lasts a matter of 2 to 3 months. But yet we pump hundreds of millions of our budget into doing it. That needs to be addressed. Chair, committing to the Barton conclusions on the multi-year budgets would prove certainty for DFI, would improve efficiencies for DFI, and would improve the road network and make it safer for all the residents that we represent. Us not calling for this would be doing a disservice to the people that we represent. And I can't continue for another year having elected reps like ourselves sitting congratulating for a pothole filled here and there. Barton also stated in the last point that the need for a more robust and transparent approach to prioritisation through the implementation of a fully focused pavement management system needs to be moved urgently. And we need an update from the ministers on that. And pavements, where he's stating there, is talking about the road network. How are they investigated? How is the defects reported? How is the £85 million funding split between all four divisions in Southern, Eastern, Western and Northern? Because we can't have a situation where the people I represent have 20% of all the defects in our council, people we all represent, and a division up the north with the same level of funding where they have 5 or 6%. That can't continue, and it's only going to get worse. So I'd ask for if everybody could support the motion to write the letter to the two ministers, totally non-political, asking them to implement the recommendations of the report so we can make the roads safer for the people that we represent. Thanks, Chair.
Councillor Byrne, Councillor Murphy. Sorry, Councillor McAteer, seconder. Do you want to speak to the motion, Councillor McAteer?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm in support of the motion, and Peter has touched most of the salient parts of it. Just to emphasise again that I think it's worth noting, and our letters should hopefully reflect this, that we note that the Northern Ireland Audit Office actually made specific recommendations there to assist the department going forward. And again, I think that needs to be really listened to, the very fact that there could be 20% savings here with a 5-year programme. Committed budget that the minister will be able to, at the end of the day, do the work and do the work in a manner that will have savings of 20%. In the situation that most ministers face, the financial thing, that actually makes a lot of sense, and that money can be plowed back into, again, our rural roads. Very interesting that the minister, the committee office, put in £1 million, which is a welcomed. But the reality of that is that that only allows around 10 potholes repairs for each assistant engineer to get it throughout all the district offices. It doesn't even look at it in any real terms. And we can see every day our roads getting worse and worse. Also, the lack of inspections are actually, again, they're a very, very small number. And the recommendation committee of the audit as well that would be reviewed and increased because they're masking the true situation on the ground. Also, the other very interesting recommendation and they made was that this department strategy would be to engage stakeholders, all stakeholders involved, which obviously would be the transport fraternity, but and very importantly, local councils. We in the SDLP would encourage this. And we would like to see him considering and taking a step further by devolving and financing responsibilities for non-trunk roads to councils, just as they do in the south. And we know we've witnessed the vast improvement of the total reversal of the situation was 15, 20 years ago. The southern roads were pure disasters, and now it's the opposite way around. So consideration should be given to that as well, to that recommendation. The other recommendation was that there was very positive work in around the trunk roads, and that again going forward, the minister should look at how the funding is reallocated, because this is what the Northern Ireland office said, that they to ensure a fair distribution of rural roads. So it wasn't been managed right. There have been over supply of funding going into the trunk roads, which are in good condition, to the detriment of our rural roads. So, Chair, I think I've just hit all the points that I've made. So I encourage people, in the interest of what I've just said, to support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor McAteer. Councillor Murphy.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Pete, for your motion. I'd like to say that we would support, you know, the sentiments of what you say. And, you know, the big issue for many, like, at the end of the day, we're living under, what, about 15 years of Tory policy, Tory austerity. We're on the receiving end of it. That obviously has to manifest itself somewhere. And, you know, we can see how it does so in the north with regards to infrastructure, education, health, etc. I think most people, in fact, all parties have agreed that there's a massive underspend, and we can't ignore that. While, you know, I would welcome a review of policy from time to time, you know, by all departments, you also always have to keep them under review and, you know, tweak where need be. But the big issue primarily is the fact that there is a massive underspend. Just can't ignore that. And all parties have been saying that. I also commend the ministers and the parties that have taken on responsibilities to try and ensure that things work better in the north, even with the limited budget that we have. But I would like to suggest an amendment to what you have proposed, Pete, because I think it would be a disservice to the constituents that I represent if we didn't go to the source of the problem. And what I'm proposing is that we write to the British government, requesting them to fulfil the demand from all parties that they adequately fund public services in the north, along with what you have proposed.
Mr. Byrne, are you happy to take Councillor Murphy's amendment? Need to let us know if you accept it.
Just accept it. I can't speak to it before I accept it, no. I needed a bit of clarity on what it is. Oh, I'm in. Sorry. I thought it wasn't around you. Yeah, happy to accept that, Declan. And I'll comment on some of the things at the end, but just for clarity, that's an addition to writing to the minister, because obviously, you know, the main point is the budget. But secondly to that, there are issues that we can deal with here in a limited budget that would actually make it more effective. So I don't want to lose that by writing to the minister's instalment. But if it's additional to writing to the minister's instalment, no problem.
Mr. Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. Just taking, you made the point I was going to make, so I have. Barnett formula isn't working for Northern Ireland citizens. Gavin Robinson, MP, for some considerable time has been on that. We're not funded adequately whatsoever, so they should be for health, should be for the DFI, Department of Economy, anything at all. We're way, way underfunded. I could give you many, many examples in my area, so that in the Moorings, where the roads are in such poor condition, they're nearly actually driving around the potholes. So, on that, we're happy in the DUP to support your motion there, Pete. And Dagman has suggested it's well worth taking into consideration. We need more money, and that's just about the head of it. The money's just not there. You know, all we can do is make the best what we have. I believe the minister will have a good go at it, so also, we're happy to support that, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor Lee Surgener.
Thank you, Chair. I'll keep it brief. Well spoken, Councillor Byrne. I agree with the other comments made by other councillors. Our Ballyhinch bypass has taken a hit by lack of funding, for example. So we know all too well in Rowallan. Basically, the Lions Group are happy to support your motion tonight.
Councillor Byrne, do you like to sum up?
Yeah, very, very briefly. No, thanks everybody for the support and the motion. And to Councillor Murphy for the amendment. As I stated in the speaking notes, the budget is the issue. But underneath the budget, the effectiveness of how that is deployed needs addressed. So the recommendations state what we can do to make the situation better here. And to ignore that and have another report sitting on the shelf gathering dust would be criminal, in my view. given the state of the roads, and particularly the rural roads. And just to finish, when you're talking about funding, because I think it was it Glyn that came in there and talked about the Barna consequential, 2.5 times the spend in England, 2.5 times the spend per capita in Scotland, 40% higher in Wales than here. We need to be making a song and dance with. So thank you very much for the support.
Is everyone in agreement? Moving on, item 13 is a notice of motion, the right to food. The motion has come from Councillor Galbraith. Councillor Galbraith, if you read your motion, let us know who's going to second it and will be heard here at the full council.
Thanks, Chair. Just there's a slight amendment added at the end of the first paragraph there, and I've sent it on to Sarah, so I'll have. But this council recognises the impact the scourge of food poverty is having on families right across this area, made worse by the cost of living emergency, and gives its formal backing to the Right to Food campaign, joining cities like Belfast, Derry and Liverpool, becoming a Right to Food council area. We believe that this executive and the British government must prioritise food poverty, implementing a range of new measures, including universal free school meals, support of community kitchens and enshrining the right to food for all through legislation. This council will also write to the Minister for Communities, calling for immediate action on the implementation of an anti-poverty strategy. It will be seconded by Councillor Andrews. Sorry. Chair, I believe that poverty isn't inevitable. Poverty is a political choice, and I am asking members of this council tonight to support this motion in recognising that access to food should be a basic human right for all in this area, and that we as a collective, as a council, will continue to strive to respond to the hunger that exists in our communities, while calling on government to tackle the issue head on. The Right to Food campaign believes that this is achievable by formulating policies and implementing measures such as universal free school meals, support for community kitchens, and importantly, calling upon government to enshrine the right to food for all through proper legislation. Members will know that the situation in each of our areas is worsening day by day. Food banks, charities, community organisations are the forefront now of what is sadly looking increasingly like a humanitarian response. They aren't just there providing food, but are providing a wraparound service with advice and support, generally being there for people when they need it most. I want to pay tribute tonight to those groups who are continually stepping up for people here and do so with dignity at the forefront of all that they do. In 2024, no child should be going hungry and no family forced to rely on food banks to feed themselves and their children. Yet many more are, and many more sadly will. I have talked to organisations such as the Fountain Food Bank here in Downpatrick. They have described some of the issues that individuals and families face right now. It is unacceptable that 1 in 5 children are experiencing poverty here. It is unacceptable that a large percentage of households are unable to afford the basic items. Enough is enough. As a council, we have a responsibility to tackle poverty and to also hold the executive to account for failing to implement an anti-poverty strategy that will pull so many out of hardship and place the right to food as a priority for all. I ask this council tonight to send a powerful message of solidarity to the many people in Newry Morning Down living in crisis and hardship by becoming a right to food council area and recognising that access to food should be a human right enshrined in law for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Galbraith. Councillor Andrews.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank my colleague, Councillor Galbraith, for tabling this motion, and I'm honoured to second. As we all know, food poverty and the impact that it's happening, especially in the difficult times that we're in, our area, and like so many others, are suffering as a result. We've seen at first hand the cost of living, how costs and prices, etc., have gone through the roof, and how it's impacted on near enough everybody. You know, and as I say, resulting is one of the reasons in this motion being tabled tonight. You know, I had spoken on various motions, so I've tabled motions previously on benefits and welfare reform and other matters such as cost of living, and again highlighting points that are relevant. You know, within the next few weeks, schools are going to be closing, and a lot of kids at present would probably depend on a meal at school, probably the only meal that they would get, and with the holidays and all, whatever, that's all going to be hitting the head. But again, 2024, as my colleague has said, you know, it's not 18-24, you know, no child should be going hungry and no family more so rely on food banks. But again, I think that we should, as a council, and the United Council, send a powerful message of solidarity that we are with the many people in Newry Morne and Down District living in crisis and hardship, and by becoming a right to food city and recognising that access to food should be a human right enshrined and law for all, and ensuring that the proper funding and compassion from the government, etc., to give help where it matters. So I'm seconding the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor O'Hare.
Councillor Galbraith's proposals. We recognise and commend the excellent work of local food banks such as the Pantry and Fountain Food Banks locally, and the great work of the County Down Rural Community Network setting up social supermarkets and the introduction of free school meal payments during holidays. A recent report from the NI Audit Office was published on child poverty. The report outlines in detail that 1 in 5 children in the north is living in poverty. Children receiving free school meals are twice as likely to leave school with no GCSEs, and there are ongoing concerns about their school attendance. All evidence shows that children who grow up in poverty are more likely to experience health inequalities, have lower levels of educational attainment, and to experience poverty as adults. It's clear from the report that there is much work to be done to address the growing levels of child poverty, and that there are lessons to be learned as work continues towards finalising the anti-poverty strategy. It is vital that the Minister for Communities, whose department is the lead on the issue, makes that a key priority. Sinn Féin want the Minister to bring forward a timeline for the strategy's completion as a matter of urgency, and to ensure that the recommendations made in the audit report are considered as part of that process. The cost of not doing so is simply too high, both for those affected personally and for public services in the long term. Poverty is a political choice, and we must be united in the commitment to eradicate it. We must remain focused on addressing inequality in all its forms and on improving the prosperity of and opportunities for all citizens, especially our children and young people. We would suggest a slight amendment to write to the Minister for Education also, as they have a role to play in tackling food poverty.
Councillor Galbraith, are you happy to take Councillor O'Hare's amendment?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we are happy to support this motion. We do believe the Executive and the British Government must do all within their power to tackle the pressing issue of food poverty, and have the anti-poverty strategy that was agreed under a new decade, new approach, implemented as soon as possible, especially with the cost of living crisis continuing to blight our society. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. I thought my name had disappeared there. I took a grudge again. Now, to be quite honest with you, I would commend you there, Sir, Councillor, for bringing forward this motion. Everything that's been said tonight there really does make sense. Councillor O'Hare said that those who have difficulty and are in the poorest circumstances and can't even afford to eat, they're the ones that are inclined to come out with the worst situation and education. So there, in every form, so there's to give anybody that opportunity. Basically, I don't know how much the council can do to help. We can support the food banks and all that we can do, but it's really centre government that needs to step up to the mark here and really step in a way that children there, as Terry said, we're coming into the summer holidays now, and possibly there's quite a few of them there. We're depending on schools there for at least one decent meal a day. That will be gone now, so it will for the time being. I'm not sure that's still in place. That is, I'm honestly not sure. Over the summertime, that one meal or funding for one meal would be there for a child. So, on this here, everybody's an entitlement, so they have to have a reasonable standard of living, and that food that's available for them, good nourishing food. So, we in the DUP are happy to second the motion, so we're, or it's not second, but support the motion.
Councillor Bowsey.
Yeah, I was just to say that the DUP supports this. The poverty organisation is something I've been involved in for all my adult life. I did my dissertation on poverty, and the role of faith-based organisations is a huge one. 80% reckoned of non-governmental support for poverty strategies such as food banks, etc., are from faith-based sectors. So I would particularly like to commend Councillor Braith for the work in terms of highlighting the work of local community groups. And just to reinforce that, I would like to see the church, the councils and the council working with churches and parachurch organisations. You know, in my area, you've got the likes of Christians Against Poverty and Vincent de Paul that do great work. So work with them to support their food banks and the different grant schemes that they give out. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowsey. Councillor Gilbreath, if you'd like to sum up.
Thanks, Chair. Just thanks to everyone for their support this evening. And I look forward to getting more involved in the Right to Food campaign, and hopefully you'll be seeing more of it over the next number of months across Newry, Moreland and Down. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 14 was a motion on Ireland's Ancient East. Councillor Feehan, could you just clarify that you have withdrawn this motion, please?
Motion's withdrawn. Got what I was looking earlier on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Item 15 is a motion on dog filing. The notice of motion is from Councillor Howie. Councillor Howie, if you could read your motion and let us know who's going to second it, please. It will be...
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would just like to take the opportunity to thank yourself and members across the Chamber just for their kind messages after Noah and I's wedding last month. But yeah, we had a lovely day, and I just want to pass that thanks to...
Just before you start, Councillor Howie, it's being deferred to Sustainability and Environment Committee.
That's no problem. I'm aware of that. But for my motion tonight, Councillor Truesdale will be seconding, and the motion reads as follows. That this council will be focused on providing long-term solutions around enforcement and communication campaigns with regard to dog fouling. Council officers will also look at best practice in councillors who already operate a customer reporting hub, such as Belfast City Council. This council will use data provided by members of the public, elected members via customer hub, and hotspots will be identified, and enforcement officers will know exactly areas of most need. This will then inform social media and posts by council on areas experiencing high dog fouling, encouraging the public to become more aware of their responsibilities. Data may also be used to work out where bins are lacking in the district and inform their placement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Howie. Item 16 is a motion on baby loss. The motion comes from Councillor Howell. Councillor Howell, if you could read your motion, let us know who's going to second it, and it will be heard here at full council.
Thank you, Councillor Hart. And the motion will be seconded by Councillor Selena Murphy. My motion reads, this council acknowledges the grief, pain and trauma caused by the loss of a baby during pregnancy. Recognises that the trauma felt is exacerbated by bereaved parents having to travel to England for a post-mortem due to the absence of local perinatal and paediatric pathology. Further recognises the potential of an all-in paediatric pathology service so bereaved parents could access post-mortems in the island of Ireland. Believes that parents should have the option to have their child's memory recorded with an official certificate free of charge, and supports the intention of the Finance Minister to develop a baby loss certificate scheme for those parents that have lost a baby during pregnancy before 24 weeks. I have no doubt that there isn't a member in the Chamber who hasn't been impacted or knows of a family who have been impacted by baby loss. A loss that brings indescribable grief which stays with parents and families for the rest of their lives. Pregnancy loss affects approximately 1 in 4 pregnancies, and sadly, where this loss occurs prior to 24 weeks, the lack of support and acknowledgement for that baby and their families is stark. While pregnancy should be an exciting time for parents as they build their hopes and dreams for their child, who he or she will look like and the joy that baby will bring to their lives, it can also be a time of worry. The the feelings of anxiety and anticipation at every check-up and scan appointment throughout your pregnancy while yearning for the regular reassurance that your baby is doing well and is safe and healthy can be nerve-wracking. Receiving the earth-shattering news that your baby has sadly passed away is the worst news imaginable for many parents. Those words haunt parents for the rest of their lives. Having received that news myself at 28 weeks pregnant with my little girl Blanna in 2010, I can put my hand on my heart and say it felt like our world had ended. Unfortunately, the devastating loss of a baby during pregnancy, is too often overlooked and treated as taboo in our society, with many parents suffering the tragedy alone and feeling that no one will understand the depth of their loss as they struggle with the loss in silence. We were blessed with a loving family who supported us at every step of our journey, along with a fantastic team of midwives and nurses in both Daisy Hill and the community team in Castlewellan. Unfortunately, bereavement care and support is also an issue which needs to be addressed and one I feel it needs to be included in the maternity strategy. As I said, the heartbreak of losing a baby is a reality that touches the lives of countless families around us. Last month, my Sinn Féin colleagues, Liz Kimmins and Sinead Ennis, tabled a motion in the Assembly calling for the official recognition of this loss by committing to deliver a baby loss certificate scheme for parents who lose a child before 24 weeks and to acknowledge the absence of a local perinatal and paediatric pathologist, further recognising the potential of an All-Ireland paediatric pathologist service here on the island. The introduction of the certificate scheme will send a clear message to parents who have suffered a pregnancy loss that their baby existed and that their love was real and their grief is valid and they aren't alone. But the certificate is not just ink on paper. It is a testament to the love that was felt, the dreams that were woven and the hopes that were held for a precious life cut short. It is an acknowledgement and a symbol of remembrance. By supporting this, we are letting those parents know that your baby existed, they were part of your family and we recognise that. The devastation of the loss is only further compounded when families face further heartbreak by having to take their child to Liverpool's Aldertay Children's Hospital for postmortem services. In 2010, we were informed that due to circumstances at that time, if we wanted a postmortem carried out in Blanna, she would have to travel to Liverpool. Whilst we had so many questions we needed answered, we could not bear to be separated from her and did not want her to go alone. We also wanted and needed to be with our other children, as the loss is not just felt by parents, but by other siblings. To this day, it's very hard to understand why we could not access the service here on the island. We still have so many unanswered questions. Figures show that from 2018, over 800 families have been affected by this issue and have had to seek a hospital post-mortem after the death of the child. All any parent wants is to be able to spend as much time with their baby before the burial, while all the time trying to come to terms with what has happened. To be separated from your baby is something that parents find extremely difficult, and many, many never get over it. Sinn Féin have been working to see greater all-Ireland cooperation with regard to the paediatric pathology services so that parents can access those services on this island. Access to this service would ease that burden and the heartbreak on families who are already experiencing such trauma and devastation. It is time for we can deliver post-mortem services on the island to the parents and families who have to access them. I acknowledge that pregnancy and baby loss is a complex, multifaceted issue, and it is evident that no one size fits all when tailoring support for families' impact. Therefore, we must ensure that any proposal or scheme brought forward are easily accessed for those in need, not create any additional stress or suffering during what is already a traumatic time for them. I want to commend the Finance Minister, Caoimhe Archibald, who is committed to work towards the delivery of the certificate scheme, and the Economy Minister, Conor Murphy, who is currently working to expand parental bereavement leave to include those who have lost their baby prior to 24 weeks. I hope you can all support this motion this evening and do the right thing by the parents and put your arms around those who carry this grief. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Howell, Councillor Murphy.
We put the needs and the wishes of those families that have been first, especially when it comes to families who have experienced this heartbreaking devastation do not want to be separated from their child, cannot understand why they cannot access. I know many families, my families within the constituency who have had to endure being separated from their precious babies, something they will never get over. Whilst we recognise that everyone deals with grief differently, it is very evident that a baby loss certificate Friday, and many families offered to deal with their loss. We have some fantastic organisations across the North that are providing invaluable support to families through their losses. Sands, Cradle, Little Forget-Me-Not, Taking Arms and Tiny. These organisations bring a wealth of experience and expertise to help develop the compassionate care and support that bereaved parents need to deserve, regardless of the time of loss. They have emphasised just how significant the implementation of the baby loss certificate to recognise the loss for families to facilitate the grieving.
Councillor Devlin. Sorry, Councillor Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Is it on? Thank you, Chair. Just to thank Councillor Hyle for bringing this motion on for sharing her own story. My own health sister had lost her child 2 weeks after it was he was born, but at least that she got to spend that time. She got to spend the 2 weeks with him. On the day that Teddy actually died, I was at a pip here in down Patrick here, and they actually managed to keep the young fella on the you know, the life support machine until I was able to comfort down Patrick up. But I think if, you know, so you're sort of have to do these things again, it's something that I'll always regret that I didn't just go up there straight whenever I had heard that things weren't good. But that they were sort of able to process that because they got to spend the 2 weeks, because they got that time, because they knew that things weren't good. But I think there is need for a loss certificate just to show parents that they do have the support out there and that they do have that sort of understanding. I know that this was brought to the family, and that it was given broad support at the assembly. And in terms of that, I would just like to propose an amendment there. On the part, if you leave out from further recognises to an all Ireland and insert the word in six the reinstatement of a regional paediatric pathology service in Northern Ireland, while recognising the potential for mutually beneficial cross-border cooperation, because I would think that we do have a local executive here. We have a local health trust, and that would probably be the best place that local parents could go. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Howell, are you happy to accept?
Yes.
Thank you. Councillor Devlin.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Roisin, for tabling such an important and incredibly sensitive motion to this House this evening and sharing your own really difficult story. I'm so sorry to hear all of that. As a parent, I can really imagine the utter devastation of losing a child, a thought that I find really difficult to even comprehend. To then think that a parent in that period of utter desperation has to endure their child travelling to England for a post-mortem, none of that is right, nor should it be acceptable.
I understand that attempts were made in the south of Ireland, but no such provider was found, but we must not rest at that. We must all collectively do all we can to have the service provided here on this island, be that north or south. We all should do everything in our power to recognise our shared humanity and come together in the spirit of finding a solution that serves the grieving parents and our wider society so much better. So thanks again to Roisin for highlighting this really difficult issue and being so honest with us all. And the SCLP, clearly, Roisin, will be fully supporting your motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Devlin. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Councillor Hoyle, for bringing this motion. And thank you, Councillor Hoyle and Councillor Lewis, for both sharing your stories. They obviously came straight from the heart. I watched the very emotional reading in the Assembly on the 15th of April, and these are incredibly difficult stories, and Alliance want to support this motion. Baby loss certificates are a tangible form of acknowledging the loss, and their baby will never be forgotten. With regards to paediatric pathology, having to fly to England for post-mortem compounds the trauma and the grief. It is just cruel. But with the support of the motion, there is more work to be done by health and by finance on a scoping exercise around the pathology services in particular. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Howe, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, and thanks to everyone for the support of this motion. As you can tell, it's something very close to my heart, but something that I've been advocating for quite some time. Baby loss clearly touches many families across our community. It impacts on people from many different walks of life and backgrounds. It unites people from across society in a shared suffering that is all too often born in silence. And I'll just finish with this week quote. A wife who loses a husband is a widow. A husband who loses a wife is a widower. And a child who loses his parents is called an orphan. But there is no word for a parent. Who loses a child touches the loss.
Is everyone in agreement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, and safe home.